sin is a place, and it's a place you can go. It's not an action or an occurrence. It is a conscious journey you make, and it doesn't take long for you to arrive at that place. It often becomes a place of slavery. And thank goodness the lockdown can be lifted, the chains can be broken, and thank God that the place of sin is also a place that you can leave. Now, the prodigal son went off to a far country, and for him sin was a place, and he wallowed in the mud a good while before he came to himself and he decided that he would leave that place. Egypt in the Bible is a picture of this world. It is a place of sin. And the Bible talks about people sojourning into Egypt. This is just a temporary visit. Abraham left the promised land to go down into Egypt because there was a famine. But he didn't plan on staying all that long. But while he was there, of course, he lied about his wife and he got into trouble. No one plans going into sin permanently. But as the old song says, sin will take you farther than you want to go. Sin will keep you longer than you want to stay. Sin will cost you far more than you want to pay. A wealthy couple wanted to hire a chauffeur to drive them in their limousine, which was parked in a rather tight, narrow garage. And they had a fear that someday their limo would be scratched on one side by an unskilled and uncaring driver. So they were very careful in their selection. And they interviewed three men. And the wife asked the first man, "Now, how close would you be able to drive my car to the edge of the entrance without scratching it?" Well, he claimed that he could get it within 4 inches without scratching. And so she asked the second one the same question. And he said, "I can get it within 1 inch." And so she asked the third, and he had a completely different outlook. He said, "Honestly, ma'am, I think it's better to play safe. If I were your driver, I'd try to stay as far away from the wall as I possibly could." And she said, "You're hired." Flirting with sin may lead to a committed relationship. It's not about how close it is that we can walk the line and still be faithful. It's like the third limousine driver. We want to stay as far away from it as we can. This evening, as we start this new series of Out of Egypt, we're beginning in a look in the book of Exodus. We're going to see some stories, probably some familiar stories as we go along. But I hope we learn new lessons as we go through some of these stories. Prisoners in Paradise this evening. The first thing for us to see here this evening is the designation of God's people. Their identity here. And it's given to us in verse 4 of chapter 1. "Now these are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt. Every man in his household came with Jacob and Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, and Dan, and Naphtali, Gad, and Asher." Now the book of redemption and freedom is begun by the Lord here by naming all these names. You know, and why is this important? And oh, and further, why are the 9 long chapters of First Chronicles nothing but names? Have you ever noticed that? And those who would like to read through their Bible every year, you know that. And tell me, those who read through their Bible every year, when you get to those 9 chapters, do you skip over them? Because they're nothing but names. And you know, he begat him, and he lived so long, and he begat this man, and he died, and they lived this long. Now, be honest, you know, when you're looking and reading that stuff, you think, now, how important is this? Well, first of all, it's a good reminder that you live and die, isn't it? So that makes certainly an important part of your time in reading them. You know, to remind you to do your giving while you're living. More importantly, a list of names is important when your name is on it. And that's what salvation is all about. Having your name written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Is your name written there? Not only about their identity, but also about their security. You know, it's in verse 5 here, chapter 1 still, verse 5. And all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls, for Joseph was in Egypt already. Joseph was their security, because Joseph had gone there before them. He is an Old Testament picture of Jesus Christ, who has gone on before us, and He has paved the way for us. I don't have to pay for my sins, because Jesus has done that already. I will one day overcome death, because Jesus has done that already. I will be able to walk on streets of gold simply because of what Jesus has done for me. Joseph, it says, died, according to verse 6, then Joseph died and all his brothers and all that generation. You know, eventually their security diminished. The basis of their blessing was gone. And humbly speaking, you know, on a national level, when this Christian nation threw out Christ, we threw out our blessings. Again, I don't like to dabble in the political field, but I do like to dabble in the religious field. And when the President of the United States stands up in a public speech before cameras and people and declares, this is not a Christian nation, we're in trouble. When America threw out the basis of its blessing, it threw out its blessing. When we decided to expel Jesus from public education, then we threw out our blessing. In 1961, prayer was banned. The next year, the Bible. And by 1980, the Supreme Court was ruling that it was unlawful to post the Ten Commandments on the wall. And you got to hear the wording on their decision. Only people who are lawyers can put something together like this. If the posted copies of the Ten Commandments are to have any effect at all, it will be to induce the school children to read, meditate upon, and perhaps to venerate and obey the commandments. Now here's the translation. You cannot display the commandment, thou shalt not kill, because somebody might obey it. That's what they said. And so one of the biggest problems our nation has seen in recent years are the killings of public institutions. You know, when will we learn? When you throw out the basis of the blessing, you throw out the blessing with it. A third thing here is their prosperity. Verse 7 here in this chapter. And the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and waxed exceedingly mighty. And the land was filled with them. It can be a deceptive thing, prosperity. No, and there is great difference between physical prosperity and spiritual prosperity. For the children of Israel in this paradise, suddenly they became prisoners. Chapter 20 refers to Egypt as the house of bondage. It is possible to have everything except joy. Now, things do not satisfy. It is possible to have gold but not have God. It's possible to have silver and be without a Savior. You can come to a place like Elvis did just before he died, in which this guy who it looked like had everything said this: I suppose I'm the most miserable man alive. Now the second thing here is the domination of God's people. In Exodus 1:8, we see that Israel is in captivity here. Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. There was this bondage of sin. Verses 11 and 14. Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burden. And they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramesses, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage, in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. And all their service within they made them serve was with rigor. This new Pharaoh is a picture of the toughest taskmaster that you'll ever have. It's shrewd and it's a deceiver. Verse 10 says, come, let us deal shrewdly with him. This shows clearly, of course, the taskmaster that we're up against in this world. Now, years ago in a harvest field, a spider crawled along minding his own business. A grasshopper came by and extended one of his feelers to shake his hand. And the spider reached out a leg, and as quick as a flash, he was attaching one strand of his web around the grasshopper. And the grasshopper kind of felt it, but instead of flying away, he could easily see that he could move about. And so he stayed, and he pulled against the web a little, and he saw that it was not strong enough to hold him, so he stayed on as the spider put on a couple more webs. And this process continued. And finally, the grasshopper seemed totally oblivious to the fact that he was getting into trouble. Until eventually, when he decided to fly away, he realized he couldn't. The spider turned his green friend over and he had him for lunch. There is pleasure in sin for a season. Like the moth to the flame, like a bug to a zapper, like an insect to fly paper, saying, I want to taste that sweet honey, and then I realize I'm stuck. You think you can have a little sin? And then you realize that sin has. James 1, 14 and 15 says, but every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Verse 11. Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramesses. You know, there's no greater burden than the burden of sin. There's no greater blessing than having that burden lifted. There's an old man that walked along a road. He was carrying this heavy sack of potatoes on his back. He had recently been baptized, and he was telling everyone, but the local atheist didn't believe him. And he approached him along the road one day and said, how can you know that you have salvation? And he stopped, and he let the bag down off his back, and he stood up, and he looked the atheist right in his eye, in the eye, and he says, how do I know I'm not carrying those potatoes? You know, I'm looking straight at you. And the atheist said, that's easy because of the lessening of the weight. That's exactly how I know about my salvation. I no longer feel the burden of my sin. Now, how many here can testify about the burden of their sin being lifted? The Old Testament has three Hebrew words that are translated as forgive. One means to send away. One means to cover. One means to lift away. And that's the meaning here in Psalm 32:5. It says, I acknowledge my sin unto thee, and mine iniquity have I not hid. I said, I will confess my transgressions unto the Lord, and thou forgivest the iniquity of my sin, Selah. Forgivest. Thou lifted away. Here, the iniquity of my sin. Roll away, roll away, roll away. Every burden of my heart, roll away. Matthew 11, verses 28 through 30. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. The bondage of sin, the burden of sin, the bitterness of sin. Verse 14 again. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage and mortar and brick and in all manner of service and all in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor. It might be fun for a while, but it always ends badly and with regret. Now Proverbs 9:17 and 18 says, stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant, but he knoweth not that the dead are there. Now what does that entirely mean? Well, let's just look on to Proverbs for the commentary on this verse. In Proverbs 20:17, bread of deceit is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth shall be filled with gravel. The prodigal son no doubt had a good time for a while with his money and with his friends, but eventually he woke up, hung over, and when he rolled over, he was staring a hog in the face. A Memphis article told of a man who found a little baby rattlesnake just after it had been hatched, and he made a pet of it. He handled it so much that it became tame, and it would, as it got older, it would actually coil around his arm, and he would allow the man to feed it with his fingers. And he even trained it to come when he whistled. And one day he was uptown showing off his pet, and they were all amazed. And that evening he went home, and with only the slightest provocation, the animal's instinct returned to it. And he buried his fangs in the man's arm, and the man died. There's a similar experience coming to some who think that they can make a pet out of sin. Proverbs 23:32. At the last it biteth like a serpent, and it stingeth like an adder. You know, the bitter end of sin. You wake up sick. And so the question is, are you sick of sin? You know, when you are sick and tired of your sin, then you become an excellent candidate for the kingdom of God. In the early 1900s, a young man in Ohio told his girl that he loved her, and he asked her to marry him. She declined. In a vengeful act, then he killed her. And he was convicted of murder, and he was sent to the penitentiary. His mother pleaded with Governor Nash with such passion that he agreed to interview him for a chance of a pardon. And the warden let the governor into the man's cell, but he did not announce his coming. And the young man mistook the governor that was all dressed up there for a preacher. And he told him to get out of his face. He says, don't you know why I'm here? And the young man shouted, no, now get the H out of here. And the governor walked out. And then the warden returned a few minutes later. He said, what did the governor say? He said, the governor? Yes, Governor Nash. And the man realized his mistake. He said, call him back. It's too late. You fool, you just threw away your only chance to get out of here. The man had a life sentence. He was never free from the bondage of the place that he was under. Under the burden of sin, you will only find bitterness. In such bondage, you have only one hope, and that is a deliverer will come your way. Jesus is the deliverer. He wants to deliver you from bondage. He can rescue from the prison of emptiness and take you to a spiritual paradise, another place not far away, but very different from the place of sin. It is a promise.